You say we don't know. We say we don't know. We say Drek This Out.
Welcome to Trek This Out, a Star Trek podcast. Today we are discussing, first off, Discovery Season 5, Episode 7, Iriga. And I am here with Sookie.
Hello.
Andrea.
Hello.
Drew.
Hello.
And some guy named Joe that lives in my house.
Hello.
Okay, so we will.
And Deb.
No, of course, Deb.
No, no, Rachel, we don't mind you ignoring Deb. It's not a problem.
I mind me ignoring Deb.
Thank you.
I was going down my screen and I skipped. I'm so sorry.
It's because I was last in, I think. Hello. I'm here.
Yes. Last but not least, Deb.
Thank you.
Okay. So before we start with initial thoughts, is there any Star Trek news?
I have some news.
Go on, Jeff.
So it looks like Sony is going to try to buy Paramount.
Wow.
Who owns Star Trek? Paramount or Sony?
Yeah, Paramount owns Star Trek right now.
All right. So what would that mean for the Star Trek franchise? Would it carry on as before, or would they mess around with it, do you think?
I think that it would carry on as before. We might see less series coming up, but the current series continuing, like Strange New Worlds continuing. But in the transition period, there's probably not going to be anything greenlit. So unfortunately, we can't expect Captain Seven to come back for quite some time, most likely.
But no Star Trek Legacy then.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shame. It's a shame.
That's still a big question mark, isn't it? The whole legacy. Will they, won't they? Okay. Well, if that's all the news.
Now. You've ruined it, Joe.
Don't mind Deb.
See, I was just going to know if that's a bad thing, because I always feel like Paramount seem to have no money. Like they always, like, you know, the way they sold Prodigy off and stuff before it even aired, I feel like they're like scratching around for cash. And I don't know if Sony are maybe a little bit more movie minded. We might get a film under a Sony umbrella. I don't know. I'm trying to be optimistic.
Maybe no, go ahead, Sookie.
I was just going to say, maybe it's a bit like the Doctor Who deal that they've done with Disney Plus, where they know they ain't going to be able to produce a product to the standards of some of the shows around the world. So they decided to go with a co-production deal. Maybe Sony and Paramount joining together to make a decent budgeted Star Trek show.
Yeah, I mean, if you're saying they're going to pump this out, the initial reaction is because we want to see Legacy. I'm not a big fan of Captain Seven, but I'm just assuming that we get Todd back. But it's quality, isn't it, over quantity? And there is always a danger if they pump too much stuff out without really thinking about we're going to get series cancelled early or we're just going to bore people. But the greedy side of me just wants more Star Trek.
Well, actually, what you said about Prodigy, Andrea, actually reminded me. And again, I don't know if this really counts as news, but you may have seen, was it last week or a couple weeks ago, when they released more of a synopsis of that new Star Wars show, The Skeleton Crew, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Which was very, very like, you know, I think before what I had heard was there's kids and a ship and is it Jude Law, I think. And that was pretty much, that was it. And then they came out with like a fuller synopsis, which sounds almost exactly like the Prodigy synopsis, which is these kids find a ship and it takes off like under its own steam, and then they're lost in space. Anyway, so now that we've lost Deb, there she comes. Okay.
We can only hope.
Sir, what's happening?
Scans show the Vereen heading this way at maximum warp.
Last time the Vereen destroyed an entire city.
Warp signatures are arriving.
Shields up.
Those will be your last words.
This clue, we have to keep it safe.
Let us out of here. You have no chance.
Neither of you understand what you're up against.
I have an idea.
We can move on to our initial thoughts on the episode.
Yeah, I enjoyed this episode to a certain degree, but the whole Moll and Lack, they're not really good villains or characters, I don't think. It's just they're a bit annoying to me, and getting rid of one of them at the end of the episode was probably a good thing. We'll see if Moll's acting or character gets a bit better. So I'm not really that impressed with that duo, but the rest of the episode was quite decent.
I've been thinking about it this week, and after listening to somebody speaking about the series, I found out that Lack and Moll sounds like whack-a-mole.
This is the sort of deep insight you get from Trek This Out.
I think the main thing about the episode is we can pick things up, but it's the stuff, the things that suddenly come up that we've been asking questions about, like the Eternity Room and the signal that's been going on the front titles about, you know, the Eternity Sign. You know, is this significant or isn't it significant? And it is like a jigsaw, isn't it? These little pieces come in, which is, I guess, why the symbol of what they're building is good. So I guess the reason I like it is not necessarily for this single episode, but the fact that it's got me excited for the next episode.
I enjoy this episode quite a bit, actually. I liked the brinkmanship between the Federation and the Breen. I thought that was quite strong. Just felt like a Next Generation kind of episode to me. You know, like a talky, but good. So yeah, I thought it was good stuff.
I feel like yet again this being the final season is frustrating us so much, because I feel like it's just a show that knows who it is and what it wants to be, and it's completely found its identity. And I think they've given us very different types of Star Trek episodes. And I totally agree with Drew, it's that kind of diplomatic, like, let's kind of try and find a resolution to this sort of episode. So I think we've had lots of different things. We had the kind of going on to the strange new world and the alien culture last week. And it's given us something different every week, but I really enjoyed it. I can't complain. I'm loving the series. It's like, it's making me sad.
Yeah. And I totally agree. I think this season, I think I've seen this a few places, but I mean, I love Discovery. I've enjoyed, you know, the ups and the downs, but I think this is just a really solid season. And I would definitely put this episode kind of in there. I think I had some mixed feelings about the episode overall, but I think it definitely moves the season plot forward. So yeah, definitely. How about you, Joe? Initial thoughts on the episode?
I completely agree. I think that Discovery's really kind of found its footing. Honestly, it kind of found its footing quite a few seasons ago, but this season just really feels like they really got the formula right. It feels like kind of a mix of Next Generation, Voyager. There's a lot of DS9 that's been thrown in there as well, mm-hmm. A lot of DS9. Overall, this episode was a fantastic episode. I like that we finally have some conflict with the Breen, we finally have them on screen, basically showing who they are. And as soon as that dreadnought came into view, oh my God, that was awesome. I really enjoyed it.
Alrighty, so now we will move into our deeper thoughts about the episode.
True, did you do your bit? I can't remember.
Yes, I did, yeah.
Got it, it's so interesting. It's been on my mind. Yeah, Rachel, are you in the next episode?
I'm sorry?
Are you in the next episode?
No.
It's a library, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, I wish.
I was going to say,
I mean, I don't know, like, well, as we were watching this episode, I think I said to Joe, well, I'm glad that we get to go on and talk about this episode, because there's so much Reno, and I love Reno. But then, yeah, the next, now they're going to a library, so.
That would have been good.
Yeah, it would have been a good one, too.
And with Reno actually having probably got a librarian's card, right? You know, you could have stamped her card for her.
Oh, yeah. See, now, I mean, I will say, I don't really do a whole lot of that in my in my day-to-day, the stamping of the cards, but I did love that. I know.
That's a very fancy and expensive library card. It's not like those orangey brown cardboard things to remember from the public library. But I think I've kind of noted it's a bit of a Doctor Who idea having a giant library that contains all of this like space knowledge and moves around. It feels like a very Who idea. And I suppose my question is, who's going to be the librarian? Because I feel like there's a huge opportunity there to kind of have someone really interesting in there, either new or someone that we kind of not expecting but have seen. And I don't know who that might be, but I'm kind of intrigued by that idea.
River Song.
You think that?
It's not Rachel, it's River Song. There is actually in the preview there's a picture of who it is.
Somebody familiar?
Well, it wasn't June Hudson.
We are mixing TV shows up today.
It wasn't Jason.
Yeah. Oh, it's a bummer.
I thought it might be a nice little callback for the EMH, because I'm sure like he gets kind of stored. That's a bit of a callback that they could use that program, but I don't think we're going to get that, but it's a little idea that I thought would be interesting.
That EMH idea was great, actually. I was thinking more along the lines of like maybe a Sung type android, but we already wasted that this season. But that would have been cool if that was librarian.
Might be exactly the same actor coming back playing a different version of the Sung robots.
Was that Fred? Was that what his name was?
Yeah.
But Fred is a dog, and the dog's dead. You can't expect me to watch 3 episodes and not get confused.
You only need to watch one Star Trek episode and you get confused. Each week.
Well, yeah, good point. I really loved, I think when they were trying to narrow down, you know, anyone in Starfleet who might know about rare books. And as they were like, who is it? And I was like, oh my gosh, who's it gonna be? And I was thinking, of course, you know, it's gonna be somebody we saw, you know, 2 seasons ago. And then of course it turned out to be our best space lesbian aunt, Jet Reno. Mm-hmm. And that was phenomenal. But also when she was talking about her history, and she said that she worked with a shady antiquarian archivist. Mm. Of course, the first person that came to mind for me was Pelia from Strange New Worlds. So
they have to have known each other, haven't they? They're both old.
And engineers, right? Like she, and I said, now that's all I want is like a short trek with Pelia and Reno.
She could still be possibly around 800, 900 years later.
Yeah.
So when they were going to find somebody to maybe have some sort of knowledge on these sort of books. In the past.
Yeah, if they were both smuggling and dodgy dealing at the same time.
Mm.
Yeah. It would be, even if it's not, you know, even if she doesn't actually show up as the librarian or something, it would be, you know, neat if she had, you know, some... She was involved in getting it there, right? Like, even like, oh, well, 500 years ago.
I also want to try some of the Jet Reno's drinks. I'm intrigued by the 7 of Limes, which I'm guessing is something they've learned about in the future. So that means clearly they need to write more stories for 7, because if she's remembered that far down the line, then she must do quite a lot. But yeah, I would quite like to attend her guest shift at Red's. She was talking about Vespa martinis the other week. I think she's the bartender that we want, need and deserve. And I love her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Such a scene stealer. Like, I know why she's not in it much now, because she comes in and let's just talk about Jet Reno for the entire episode.
I mean, it'd be fine with me, because I mean, I think I've, you know, maybe mentioned this in some of my feedback. Like, just Tig Notaro is just phenomenal. She's a great human, a great comedian. She's just everything she does, you know, like I will watch. And when she just, you know, randomly showed up in my Star Trek 5 years ago. So it was season two. You know, it just made me so happy. And when she keeps showing up, it continues to just make me so happy. Yeah, Joe.
I would love to just have Tig Notaro play the piano for me for hours.
No, she can't. She's bad at that. If you haven't seen her most recent stand-up special, I highly recommend. It's on, I think, Amazon in the United States, but I'm not sure.
I've never heard of her before, or Carol Kane, so.
Oh, well, they're both phenomenal. I don't know if Carol Kane does stand-up, but
she's more of a comedic yeah. actress.
So is she like a Les Dawson on the piano? Does she play it really badly?
Don't think that reference goes on, Deb. Yes. Google later. She'll be disappointed.
Yeah, just watch it. You'll find out. Joe, did you have...
I'm just flabbergasted that you've never heard of Carol Kane. I mean, Princess Bride.
Yeah, I've known Carol
Kane.
Yeah,
I know.
Taxi.
I think Andrea's already threatened to redshirt me in the past for not having watched Princess Bride. I need to write that down on my things to do.
Yeah, you still
write that down. Yeah,
huge. Like, it's staple in my house.
Right, written it. Yeah.
Come on, Deb. You know, but before, when does the next season of Strange New Worlds? Is that next year? Like the next 25?
Yeah, I don't think it is 25. So I think they're,
that's your homework, Deb.
I don't want to. That makes me sad. I need Star Trek.
Hold on. If she's refusing to watch extra Star Trek, I'm refusing to watch Deep Space Nine because, you know, it's extra homework.
There you go, Deb.
That is just extra.
Princess Bride for Deb. All of Deep Space Nine for Sookie.
I've written it down.
Go ahead, Andrea.
I feel like, just to make Sookie feel excluded, I think we need to talk about the absolute, like, embarrassment of riches in terms of Deep Space Nine references we got this week.
I got them all, Andrea. I got them all. I don't, you know.
Because obviously they kind of reference the Breen Destroyer Starfleet headquarters, but we've never seen a space face off. It's the first time we've kind of seen that, I think. I can't think of seeing that kind of space fight ever being on the cards. That Romulan saying never turn your back on a Breen, I think that comes from Deep Space Nine as well, and of course kind of Vulcan and Romulus are kind of as one now, so that phrase has obviously made its way across. There were loads, wasn't there? They talked about the Badlands a lot, which kind of makes us think that they're going in the direction of Deep Space Nine, so are we going to get a little cameo? Be nice to see her in the sky. You know, is the wormhole still on the go? So I feel like they were quite consciously kind of calling back to Deep Space Nine, and there were probably loads I've missed.
So when it comes to taking notes, I'm fairly meticulous due to my job that I normally perform. There were a lot of callbacks to DS9. There were actually the callback to the Badlands was primarily for me, like the what I linked it to the most was the Voyager episode, the premiere Voyager episode, where they went into the Badlands and the caretaker took them. Into the, what was it, the Delta Quadrant? But it's really funny that the saying, never turn your back on a Breen, came about because Rachel and I were just recently, I'm saying like last week, we watched the episode of DS9. It's season 5, episode 15, by Inferno's Light. It's the one where we finally found out that Bashir was actually captured and turned into a changeling. We found that a lot of our other characters were turned into changelings as well. And that was a great episode. Sookie, you're missing out, man.
Oh my God, don't you start as well, Joe. Come on, I'm getting enough from everybody else.
And the reference that everybody was making in the episode, the last time the Breen entered Federation space, that was the DS9 episode 7, episode 20, The Changing Face of Evil. And that's when they invaded and they destroyed part of Starfleet Academy and Starfleet headquarters. And it wasn't until the reference in Star Trek Voyager's episode, Pathfinder, that we found out that it took about a year for that to be repaired. So the initial attack was 2375, and Voyager Pathfinder episode, we found out that it was repaired in 2376.
Alrighty. Well, Drew, do you have any other Deep Space Nine?
No. I agree, though. I'm very interested to see where we're going to go to next week. You know, Badlands to me is Bajor and Deep Space Nine all over. So if we don't see one of them two, it's going to be a crime.
I'm not even going to pretend I remembered this, but like 2371, they mentioned that quite specifically as the year the book was written, that runs the mind. And just for me little nerdy Easter eggs, that's the year Voyager left and ended up in the Delta Quadrant. It's the same year Thomas Riker stole Defiant, and it's the year that the Enterprise D crashed on Viridian 3 and Kirk died. So it was a bit of an eventful year.
Oh, wow. I had written down the 2371, but I hadn't gotten
I did some digging for that one, because I wouldn't have remembered all of those things. But
yeah,
I'm always looking for the significance in the numbers, because I'm mathsy minded. So quite a lot happened in 2371.
Yeah, there was a lot going on. I think an interesting thing, you know, specifically with the Breen, and I think you folks have kind of touched on this a little bit this season, but you know, the question of I think it comes from Deep Space Nine, where the theory that we never saw the Breen's face because they were similar to the Dominion, where they would just like collect other races, right? Is that, now I feel like this season of Discovery, they've completely thrown that, like debunked that or thrown that out the window. And after what Rainer said about, you know, that, you know, they just, genocide is their way of life. So I was kind of interested, you know, if anyone had any thoughts about, you know, that, if we think that that's them just course correcting, or, you know.
Well, I think the thing about them being different races is from one of the books, isn't it? So it was never kind of screen canon. I think Deep Space Nine just discusses that they need refrigeration suits, don't they? Which is picked up here with the refrigeration healing unit thing that they get. Yeah, no, it's a good one for the Breen. This is it. I like that they're becoming, you know, this big space folks out there, the big baddies again, because although they was a big part of the Dominion's war in Deep Space Nine, we haven't really seen too much of them, have we? Does anyone wonder why the Universal Translator doesn't translate their language? Because it should do, shouldn't it? Why don't we have to keep turning the translator on? Okay, let's turn the translator on so we can understand them. It's a bit weird, isn't it?
It was just to make the president look clever.
It
worked. It worked.
I'm looking at
Princess Bride by the DVD now.
I think it was a bit of a plot device, wasn't it? But also I think to make it really clear that like people haven't had any contact with them, that they're an unknown, like to the point where they can't even translate their language. They do like really, really big ships. I'm going to be honest, if you're going to look like the hardest people in the galaxy, like you're going to build that, aren't you? It was like, you know, that was a really big Primark. Which I'm still struggling with, and I'm guessing you don't have Primark in the US, but it's kind of a bit like sort of Target, but just sells clothes and accessories, and it's really cheap, and they're like massive, and I thought that's a big Primark, but yeah, they kind of built massive space Titanic, and I thought those like piddly little ships don't have a chance. I mean, it made a ball cube look like a, you know, just something out of the sky. It was like, yep, that's somebody's compensating.
Yeah, I mean, talking about the ship and Borg light, yeah, I like how they've gone with the dark grey and the green lights, haven't they? A bit like the Romulans and the Borg. If you're a baddie in Star Trek, you need the dark ships and the green lights on them. That's the sign of a baddie, isn't it? And Andrea, you said, you know, they're the hard men. Is anyone wondering why that one stab wound is really so fatal to poor old Locke? Because he was going to die from it, wasn't he, until they got refrigeration sick. They're not very hard, are they, these brain, I don't think.
So just looking at my notes here, Burnham's plan to stay instead of leave the Admiral, Van's suggestion was understandable, but I thought the Breen having progenitor tech was what tipped the scale regarding the Federation headquarters being destroyed. But it turns out that the Breen just drove over them with their dreadnought.
Go back to a comment that Drew just made, which was about the suit. Now, on the suits, if they're like sort of refrigeration suits to keep them cool and healthy, if anything actually breaks a seal, they will end up maybe dying from whatever contact that touches their skin or their blood or whatever. So anything that breaks a seal, the suit, will end up killing them slowly unless they get to a proper refrigeration unit to survive.
Maybe, but then we did see him with that helmets off last week, didn't we?
That was in their own environment.
Maybe. I just think they're just like one stab wound gets him. And the other thing is, did you hear when the Primarch said about, oh, you Federation are spineless? I don't know why no one went, well, you're the jelly men, you know, you've got the spineless ones. Yeah, and Joe, you mentioned Vance. Now, the beginning of the episode where Vance says to Burnham, oh, we want you to take Locke and Mole and take them away. And she just goes, oh, no, we shouldn't do that. Wishy-washy Admiral Vance there just goes, oh, yeah, okay, you're right. He's the Admiral here. And like Burnham's just laying down what's going to go on. And there's a bit more of that goes on in the episode as well, which I could talk about, which I won't do yet.
If we were stabbed and didn't get treatment, then it would, you know, eventually get worse. I think it was the fact that it went on. But I can't remember. It was a very silly, irreverent point, which had no bearing. Really,
well, I just assume, like what you're saying about, you know, sometimes, you know, they do their helmets down. But I guess to me, my initial thought is that I assume that they're like all jelly in the suits, right? So, and then the pink face, you know, their other face, their second face,
you've maybe reminded
they,
me
they can they can handle other atmospheres. Yeah, go ahead, Deb.
But being all jellified and things like that, that reminded me of what I was going to say, and that was that Boris Johnson must be a Breen, because he's all jellified and soggy, and that's why he had to hide in the fridge to avoid reporters, so that he could sort of heal and come back with his almighty power as Prime Minister and win the election.
Oh, well.
Does that go?
For your sake, I hope not. Go ahead, Andrea.
I've completely gone off on a different tangent because that's what Deb does. So I'm going to try and pull it back to her. I was a bit surprised by Locke's death, but then I'm thinking, is it real or is it a fake out? Like, is this a plan? She's told the Breen, like, oh, take me on your ship, take me to your leader kind of thing. Everyone, we're married, you've got to take us. Like, is he going to, like, wake up? Is this, like, a whole, like, Romeo and Juliet fake out or what? Like, because I feel like he's not stupid, is he? He must have like thought that's quite a hefty dose. Like he mm-hmm. must have like had some thought, because there was no point saying we'll meet up if he knew that was going to kill him. So I'm wondering if it's a fake out intentionally by him, or if the progenitors, she's going to get the progenitors technology to bring him back.
Yeah.
They are very much the Romeo and Juliet of the season, aren't they? But I did wonder if he's going to kind of go, I'm alive. And then it's all part of some master plan, and that's she wanted to get on the ship. So I don't know. I'm not sure he's dead.
Mm-hmm. I wondered that myself.
Yeah, just a flesh wound.
He's not proper dead, is he? He's just...
it's the plot device, isn't it? Is that she is now more desperate to get her hands mm-hmm. on the technology, because she's now found out that it could heal and bring back luck back to life. So I think, because when that happened, I was like thinking, what's that about, you know? But yeah, I think it was the plot device rather than...
So Mole is saying to like the Breen Primark, you know, oh, I can get you this technology. And what can she possibly offer him though? Because she's not got any of the parts or any of the clues, has she? She's got nothing apart from the information that exists. So where's that going? It's going nowhere, is it?
Just a big bluff for some reason. And yeah, you're right. This is why I keep coming back to these two characters. They just don't seem very believable to me. They don't seem to be making proper choices, right choices, and they just seem to be really badly written characters. I just don't know why they've been badly written. I mean, might be to highlight the other characters within the show coming up against these pair of, in my opinion, pair of idiots, basically. I just don't understand these two characters.
What annoyed me about this particular episode, which I still enjoyed, was the fact that all along it makes my breasts look really big when that's at an angle.
Yeah, but sometimes I don't want to be looking at your breasts when I'm exactly, trying to concentrate. I'm trying to concentrate on the episode, not looking at your boobs.
That's why I try to move it. Right. Yeah, what frustrated me about this episode is because the whole series has been to do with sort of connections and communication and working together. And all of a sudden, Burnham and Vance are just sort of bulldozing their way through. And I've written down several times, why didn't they talk? You know, because you've got Mole going off to the on her own mission, where just as about they were about to achieve some sort of way forward. Why didn't they tell Mole what they were doing? I know they were busy, but come on, it's kind of involved some of the, you know, and it was like the same with Colburn, the doctor, you know, oh, excuse me, can I have a quiet word? Whisper, whisper, whisper. It's his, you know, you're talking about him. Talk to him. He's a patient. Let him know what you, he probably knows a refrigeration unit would help him. And then you had, Book, who was clearly frustrated about what was happening, and he's gonna now probably throw a spanner in the works because he's pissed off with what they did with Mole because it wasn't really talked to him. But oh no, she goes and has a cozy chat to Rainey. You did work really well. No, he didn't actually. You had to prize that information out of him. The people you should have been speaking to were Mole. And actually Book this time. And then at the end, when they're talking about whether they should hand over Mole, they're not talking to Mole. So Mole doesn't know why they handed her over. There was no, you know, well, actually, we are going to because we think that's the best bet. We don't actually want to hurt you because I thought they were trying to gain trust of her. But no, you know, they're handing her over to, you know, potential torture and death and whatever like that. How many times have they been in a situation where they could have said to Lacamole that, you know, if you get this technology and you hand it to the Breen, you're going to destroy everybody. It's that serious. Honestly, you know, we're just trying to negate that. It's they've never tried at one point to explain to them that this is a bad idea and why.
I'm going to just very quickly defend Lowe and Mock and the bad writing you're accusing them of there, Sucky. I just think they're flying by the pants kind of people, aren't they? They've just not got a plan. They just do what's right in front of us kind of thing. But going on to where you said about Mole wasn't in the meeting, but Book was. This is another one of these things in this episode. Why, when they were having the meeting, is there Rayner and Burnham, Vance and the president? Where's anyone else in these meetings? That, you know, why is Rayner even in the meeting? He's just a commander, isn't he? And there's about five or six spaceships there. No other captains. The only captain that's there is Burnham. And then that meeting at the end, Book's in the meeting again. There's no other captains, I think. It's a very strange Starfleet, isn't it, really?
I was just going to say, the one person you would expect to be there would be Kovacevich, wouldn't you? Because he's the one that's authorised the red directive. He's the one that's like pushing mm-hmm. this thing, and he wasn't even there at the meeting.
He's gone to Staples.
Sure, yeah. You know, just kind of criticising the writing a little bit. I think Rayner some of his choices, the way the character is, just kind of rubs me the wrong way. I'm still trying to decide if he's more heroic or you know, villain. You know, he had so much information that could have been, you know, of importance and you know, usefulness in that meeting. But instead, he just decided to close up and, you know, and leave. It just didn't make sense to me. It's just another one of those, you know, why didn't you just talk about it instead of avoid it?
Can I just, sorry, I know you've been waiting, Andrea, but quick, this is going to be my excuse at work now. If I'm sat staring in the air and not actually doing any work, I'll just go, I'm strategizing. I just thought that was a great line.
I was going to say, I spend an inordinate amount of like hours of my life in Teams meetings at work, and I do like the Breen's efficiency. It's like, yeah, we're doing this, this, and this. This is what's decided. Right, bye, see you later. I also, yeah, they're optimum for Teams meetings for me. I like the Breen style, so I'm going to try and bring that in. But I also spend a lot of time in Teams meetings because people love Teams meetings and want to be there for 4 hours and have nothing else to do. I was a bit disappointed we didn't see Saru, because I felt there was a bit of a gap for him to make a little guest appearance, but I think that's more to do with Doug Jones's availability than necessarily a writing choice. It was a bit of an odd mix, really, and I felt like Vance was a bit of a wet wipe this week, and he was like, oh no, the Breen are coming. I feel like Buck's kind of, he's trying really hard, isn't he? I feel like he's like, I'll do it, I'll fix it, I'll help, I'll fight the Breen. And I feel like he's desperately trying to compensate for things that he's got wrong historically, which I think is kind of in character. I can see where that's happening. But yeah, he's almost like, he's the kid who volunteers at the moment. He's like, me, miss me, I'll do it. So he's desperately trying to kind of make ground back up with people, I think, after he knows he sort of messed up last season. And he's got that bit of a rescuer vibe, I think, for like Maul. I think he's thinking, well, I need to save her because I couldn't save anyone else. So I think he's more conflicted and in more turmoil than is probably shown on the surface. So I think he's going to come into play a little bit more. I think there's going to be a payoff for something that's been building for a few weeks now, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I know Starfleet's meant to be decimated, but it's the lack of staff that they've got is the trouble. Because, yeah, so you've got Stamets, Book, and Tilly and Adira like, trying to sort out the next clue. Shouldn't they have, like, a squad of scientists doing this rather than just, like, a couple of the people from Discovery? And while we're putting the boot in as well to Starfleet that we seem to have moved on to, Starfleet security... terrible. So they've got these two most important prisoners, Mo and Locke, there, and they've just got like two big guys like there and the force field around them. Mo easily distracts everyone. Then they're concentrating on her. Locke quickly takes all the drugs and that lot, and then everyone's looking at Locke, and then Mo gets at. And one person beams in, Commander Narn, who we haven't spoken about yet. Great to see that she's back. So they've got one person to chase this really important fugitive. Why didn't they beam in like a squad of red shirts? It's just like, who is running Starfleet? You know, get it together, please.
Well, in my opinion, the squad of red shirts are all doing podcasts at the moment. Anyway.
Yeah, well, I was just gonna, you know, kind of follow up what Drew was saying. I think, you know, there's definitely, you know, a sense of, I think for Maul and Locke, you know, flying by the seat of their pants. I think that's, you know, they're talking at the end about, oh, what's her plan? That's assuming that she actually has one, like a little bit like bold to assume that she has a plan other than survival, which is, you know, a pretty strong instinct. But I think that's kind of, you know, what Deb, I think it was Deb said about, you know, why do they, you know, they're spreading everybody thin. Why aren't they telling her the plan? Well, part of it, I think, you know, she's a prisoner. I mean, that's, you know, she's still like, well, she's committed crimes as we've seen all across the galaxy, right? We saw like her whole rap sheet a couple episodes ago. She's wanted for a list of stuff all across the quadrant. So I can understand why they're not going to try to connect with her maybe in those last 5 minutes that they have. But also, I think, you know, throwing a wild card into a plan is just kind of a tried and true storytelling technique, and I know, you know, Star Trek has done that, right? So we have a plan, but there's going to be this person. I think last season it was Book sometimes, right? Like, we're going to do this thing, but he goes off and does his own thing because of his emotions and his grief. This season, you know, they have a plan. They have their small group of people working on stuff. And I, at least my take on that is because it's Red Directive. Like, I think other crews might know that Discovery is on a mission, but I don't think that they've shared that widely. Because it's still, you know, like, we don't want the Breen to know, so we're keeping it close, you know, so that would be why they don't have a huge team. And also, you know, Starfleet, I think, is spread pretty thin because I mean, their numbers are down, but I think they've still got people, you know, spread to the far reaches making those contacts. It's kind of why I think, you know, Saru is doing his ambassador thing. You know, he's working with a small group of planets. So there are a lot of people doing a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I wasn't saying they should tell them the plan, but they've not done anything to try and really persuade them that they're not a danger. Apart from, well, we're trying to heal you here. You know, it's just about why try and kill someone and actually tell them what they're doing, or saying, well, we don't understand your physiology, do you? You know, do you think cold would sort you? So, but what they haven't said is this isn't just about money that you can get from this. This is about, this could potentially kill everybody if it goes into the hands of the Breen. To give them some idea that this isn't just a bargaining tool, it's more than that. But the other thing, you talk about thinly stretched other ships, I thought Andrea will probably say, if I don't, is which is why I help out, USS Mitchell.
Yeah.
I thought that there was a line previously about there being a USS Mitchell.
I thought so. I didn't catch... I think till the second watch, I remembered from the first watch that there was a ship, but then in the second watch I caught that it was the USS Mitchell.
Yeah. But I thought, because if it wasn't, then he died in February, which would have meant that this would have been an added part of filming that was done more recently. And I know they did refilm some parts of it. Andrea?
I was just going to say, I've seen some pictures from FedCon, which is on this weekend, which I suppose probably should have gone in news, but there's a lot of Trek guests there. I was quite jealous, like leafing through some people's photographs. I noticed Anthony Rapp was wearing the Ken Mitchell Be Kind t-shirt, and he said the line, so I thought that was a classy touch as well.
Yeah. I just want to go back to the spaceships. They did all come back. You know, they had four or five of them suddenly appear, so that... If they are all on diplomatic missions, they've all got to be quite close by to be able to make that journey quite back. But do you think the four plus Discovery would have been enough to take down a Dreadnought ship? Because the Dreadnought ship could, if they wanted to, maybe take down that space station plus the spaceships.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the Mitchell was introduced last season. The Mitchell was first introduced to evacuate survivors from Titan during the DMA attack. And regarding the Dreadnought versus five Starfleet ships and Federation headquarters, I mean, we haven't really seen Federation headquarters do a full-on attack or anything like that. So I'm not really sure. I mean, it's fully possible that the Breen are still, outgunning the Federation here.
I mean, they definitely have, you know, the size. And I, one thing, and I don't know if they just did this on purpose to save money or if I just haven't seen, I don't know if there's other shots of a Dreadnought, but I couldn't really tell if like half of it was covered in like the clouds or if it was more like a compact kind of like a short chubby guy. But I don't know.
So there was one scene that I wanted to ask everybody. Now, the bit where Adira, Tilly are questioning Reno and they suddenly realise that there's something coming, and then you see the shadow go across the corridor towards them. Now, the next shot, you see you're looking from outside, you see Discovery and the Dreadnought coming up, but there's no way there's a shadow going over Discovery. So there was a big continuity error, in my opinion, there. I mean, there might have been a shadow from somewhere, but where? It wasn't from that Dreadnought.
Well, I think it was just dramatic. So, I mean, assuming that they warped in, right? Or did they not? They warp in somewhere else and they kind of, like, you know, did their little... maybe they were doing a pass, you know, just like doing check a full...
Check out the lay of the land.
I mean, I think it was effective. Whether it was just, you know... I guess I could hand wave it because it's a... That's a big old ship either way. But yeah, I think, you know, you're right, Joe. I don't think we have seen... We saw headquarters like almost get like blown away last season, but it wasn't like a space battle.
Their capabilities in terms of, you know, separating out and you know, that the headquarters is basically just one modular ship. You know, when they were evacuating people from Earth, but no, we've never seen what kind of firepower the future Federation truly has. Like, what's next after quantum torpedoes?
I don't know. I bet, what's his name knows? David Cronenberg. Sure he knows. Okay, do we have anything else on the deeper thoughts or anything from our notes that we just need to get out there?
Book said shite, didn't they? Which I liked. It's good that we're still using that swear in the future.
So there was a reference to Holodeck for the Littles, which kind of reminded me of a not so enjoyable episode of Voyager. Sorry, it's not one of my favourites. It was a bit of a throwback. But also Tilly was talking about going off to like be with the cadets. And I think there was probably a link to the fact that the last time the Breen turned up, they destroyed Starfleet headquarters, which I'm sure includes the Academy. And it was like, well, this is... again, but I also think it's yet another reference that I feel like they're doing their best to prime us for an Academy show. She's definitely torn, isn't she, because she wants to go off and kind of protect them, and she's got that almost sort of a motherly kind of role there, but also wanting to be on the ship, and Stamets kind of, he almost kind of emotionally blackmailed her in the corridor, I thought, to like, no, come and do this. But yeah, I thought that was another kind of reference to something that we're potentially going to get. I'm not going to say we're going to get it because I don't think we know, but I thought that was quite interesting. But he did kind of pull her back, and I think she is quite torn. I think she wants a foot in both camps at the moment. So
the only thing I want to talk about is like Narn having the actress come back, Rachel, it's your namesake anyway, I think it was. She came back, and it was a great addition to the cast, and having her back. She was a bit kick-ass, and you're right about the security detail. It was totally wrong for whatever was happening in the med bay there. It should have been a lot more security. But for the character to come back, I quite enjoyed seeing her again.
It was good seeing Colbert getting a bit fisty, though, wasn't it? Because you don't often see that. He is good fighting Mole. I just wanted to send him one person at a time after Mole. Like, how many she was going to beat up before, like, someone would get the better of her. She's obviously a good fighter, isn't she?
Yeah, she's scrappy, for sure. Deb, are you situated? Did you have anything else from your notes you wanted to share?
No, it's all right. I was, I lost my pen. I like my pen.
Oh, no.
I was panicking. So in my trauma, I had to go and get a glass of wine. And my only contribution would have been what comes after, what was it, in the weapons. Is because I'm still confused. It would have been nappy farts.
That's the other show. That's the next.
I know one. It's the too next much. Bit,
Deb.
My brain's full.
Joe, did you have anything else in your notes that you wanted to share?
I like that they had a nice reference to Marina Sirtis when they referenced that character, Marina Drax. It was kind of weird. I honestly thought that Maul giving herself up was kind of like a what-if dream sequence. Like, why would the Breen allow her to be at Locke's deathbed, basically? That was just very strange, especially considering how the Breen have treated every situation, you know, leading up to this. Just very, punctuary, I guess, would be a good word for it. They just want the answer. They want, you know, their prisoners, and they want to leave. Even after we just recently rewatched it today, the ending scene where Burnham calls for the code black, or black alert, it just kind of felt like the episode was starting instead of ending. And I really hope that Elias Tufexis comes back, even though Rachel likes to pronounce that name differently.
I don't like to pronounce. I mispronounced it like one time.
She was absolutely consistent. I had to go on Google. Three different, you know, pronunciation clips. So
okay. So what was the initial pronunciation that she had?
I assumed it was Tufaux, because it looks like a French Canadian spelling when he is Canadian. So, I mean, I still maintain, and I'm sure there's probably clips of him talking about it. It's probably supposed to be Tufaux, but it's one of those situations where people have been mispronouncing it for so long that that's just how they say it now. Because
yes,
it's
Rachel.
French, it doesn't make sense to me.
Yes, Rachel.
It was very difficult for me to let that go, I will admit. But, you know, I even pulled up I think he was on the Ready Room with Will Wheaton, and I just pulled up the first intro clip to see how Will Wheaton said it, and he did say Tufexis, so that's the correct way to do it. But no, he has done a phenomenal job all season, so yeah, it would be great to see him, whether he's, you know, actually not dead, you know, not dead yet, or only mostly dead, or if it's flashbacks, because it does seem like there could be opportunity for some flashback, you know, context with maybe him and his uncle, or more with him and Maul, because I was not expecting. I think we were watching the episode, and I think maybe Joe said, or I said, I don't think that everyone makes it out of the season alive, but I did not expect him to die to just like that.
'Tis just a flesh wound. He'll be better. No, I just love the fact that the actor is a huge nerd.
Yeah.
I've put that to him as well, that it was nerd's role, and it was lovely to see such a Trekkie geek on the show. He'll be fantastic at comms.
Oh yes. And, you know, he was in season one. He was one of the prisoners in the transport in the first, what would have been, what, episode two?
Mm.
Yeah, in episode two with Michael.
I just recently watched that episode.
I think when I saw him, well, originally, but then when we rewatched it, I was like, oh, it's that guy, because he's one of those Canadian actors that's been in some, you know, some various sci-fi shows, kind of, you know, one of those people that pops up, kind of similar category to where I used to put Todd Stashwick. Like, oh, it's that guy's and stuff, but he's been in some bigger roles recently.
Was it going to say we had Dominic Burgess on the show quite a long time ago? It was Mr. Vup in Picard, and he's a massive Trekkie, he's a massive Voyager fan, and it's nice, kind of like, it's like they're living the dream for us, aren't they? It's like you love it and you're in it, so
yeah.
You know, he wants to appear on a podcast, we are here.
Somebody reach out to Alexis, make sure you pronounce his surname correctly, and then we'll get him onto the podcast.
I missed a bit, and it is actually relevant. When Reno was talking about the archive and how she got around, there was mention about the plasma storm and also Eternity. And I can't remember, because I only wrote down Eternity. And that's another thing that comes up in the beginning titles, is the Eternity sign.
Oh, right. And that's, though, that is the little, doesn't that the communication device for the white room with
The Eternity,
what's his name,
Kovich.
Yeah, with Kovich. So that's how they, yeah, because the library is what they call it, the Eternal Gallery and Archive. So I think when
so it's the Bodleian library.
Yeah, it is. It's the Bodleian Space Library.
But I just think that
no
Eternity
flames.
If it's significant enough for the Eternity sign to be in the titles, there are always clues in Star Trek now in the titles that that could be significant. I don't know. Maybe Lorca's in there. It's filed away.
If he's anywhere.
It's filed underway.
Oh, you mean in the archive?
It's filed away under Sex God.
Bingo.
more likely to be in that what was it, Picard, the Daystrom, you know, backup storage. That's where I would maybe go looking for Lorca. But
as long as he's filed under sexiest man or misunderstood.
Obviously. Mm. Obviously. But okay, I think that's all of our thoughts. And now we will move on to our lights out of five.
How many lights you see?
Four lights!
I asked how many lights you see.
And I will start with you, Suki.
Yeah, as it says, I enjoyed it up to a point. I am not going to give it a really high mark, so I'm going to give with a middle-of-the-road mark, which is 2.49.
2.49?
Yes.
Okay. And how about you, Andrea?
I'm going to give it 3.5. I think there have been episodes I've liked better, but it was still good. It was, I enjoyed it, and it went over really quickly, so I think it was solid. I think it was a decent episode, so 3.5.
Okay. How about you, Drew?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. It's not, certainly not the best of the season, but it's definitely a 4 for me. It's good stuff.
And how about you, Deb?
3.5, because I enjoyed it. You can pick holes in it, but it's made me very excited to see what comes next. I'm also sad that the numbers are getting up to 10.
Yeah, there's only a few left. And Joe, how many lights out of 5 would you give this episode?
I'd give it 3.5 lights out of 5.
That's Joe's very first rating of the season. I shall be having words with you later.
For the rest of the episodes. Yes. Now, sure. We're going to give this one 4 because I don't do the halves. I don't do the half stuff for this. I gave it a solid 4 because I think it was a good episode, and kind of like, you know, we discussed initially, that I think it did a lot to move the season, right? Like the overarching story. So, and it was enjoyable and didn't, you know, it was good. So 4. Suki.
So you must be very disappointed when I go around doing things like 2.49. Yes.
You're the one that has to keep track of these though, right?
Oh no, this is easily tracked when it's on an Excel sheet, easily tracked.
Exactly. Like you've got it on your Excel sheet. So I'd hate to see what the, I mean, I do lots of Excel sheets in my day job. So anytime I can round up or down.
There's something going on with you, Suki, and all this 2.49, isn't it? How can you possibly say, like, weird, get it down to that fine 2.49? In fact, after last week's listeners' feedback and you converting anyone who didn't do it out of 5 into a out of 5 ratio, I was very tempted to give you something difficult. I was nearly said root 7 out of pi lights out of lights to give you something, to a bit of maths to work on.
Well,
so I'm tempted to change my score to that, but I don't want to get on an early red shirt.
Don't worry, I've already got you down on my red shirt list. Don't worry about that. And I would have converted it. I would have worked it out.
You're going to convert root 7 out of pi?
I would have worked it out. If not, I would have just made it up and just put 2.
Well, that wouldn't be correct.
But yeah, who's to know? Nobody else knows. I wouldn't have known. Nobody else is going to work it out.
I bet Andrea could work it out.
I just had it in my head. I thought, Andrea.
Maths teacher in the room.
Yeah, someone's got to go back and check Suki's work, I think is what I'm hearing. But okay. Listen up. So now we will move on to listener feedback. And I think we've got, one episode 6 feedback, and then everything else is for episode 7. So I'm just going to go in the order that you all are on my screen. So I will let Suki start with...
It's a nice short one from our Connie. Connie says, for episode 6, finally watched it. Basically, it felt like I was watching an old episode of Stargate SG-1. so-so episode, so can we just get this chase done and get going with some progenitor fun? 3 bowls of water out of 5. Cheers for that, Connie.
Okay, and then I have Murray Christensen, episode 7. He says, "Hi, everyone. I may have worked out why we don't see too much of Jet Reno. She effortlessly steals every scene she is in and is glorious." I agree. "A combination of this and the return of Nan has possibly put me in a good mood because I enjoyed this episode. Of course, it may also have been because things didn't play out in the way I thought they would. The episode is talky, but it kept my attention and it never seemed to drag. I'm looking forward to next week's Space Library as well. 4 lights from me." Thank you, Murray. Okay, so Andrea, you have Dave K.
Yep, so I've got Dave K. from the Doctor Who Show podcast, who says, "I feel like I'm typing the same comments every week now. I'm sorry. Once again, a perfectly fine episode with some interesting ideas. Once again, most of those ideas are explored by people talking urgently. Even the promise of a cool space battle was resolved by lots of urgent talking. At least there was a little more pace to this one. 3.65 lights. By the way, agree with Deb that exploring religion is an interesting topic, one I approach as a curious atheist, and I recommend Deep Space Nine's In the Hands of the Prophets as the best example of this in Trek. Sookie, watch Deep Space Nine."
Oh, come on, guys. I mean,
well, gotta do it. Gotta do it. Okay, Drew, you read Jack.
Yes, so our next feedback is from Jack McMorrow, episode 7, Star Trek Discovery, Erega. And he has to say, "When they mention the leader of the Breen is a Primarch, I hope we see the Breen Tescos, the Breen Rumbelows, and Breen British Home Stores. I'm a bit concerned that yet again an episode of Discovery mentions a character that has been absent, and then we don't get to see them. Saru this week, and Lorca a few weeks ago. This problem is compounded, arguably, by the return on Narn. I'm happy for those who wanted her back. To me, it seems Discovery is passing an end-of-term exam by copying Picard's Season 3 notes and changing the words a little bit. Here, by bringing in a long-absent security officer, Narn, Roe, and this season's Commander Rayner, Captain Shaw. Bit miffed that they've not focused on anything on the crew who aren't Michael, Book, Sylvia, Paul, or Hugh. Has a line even gone to Oa and Detmer since season 4? A glorious space cat grudge is a virtual cameo only. But with only 2 seasons left, I doubt that can or will change. Is it just me? I don't know why I'm struggling to read today, but I am.
Is it just me?
Yes, I need a drink. Is it just me that thought when we were looking through Lax Prov that Mole really looks like Nurse Chapel from Strange New Worlds? Overall, to me, until business picked up at the end with the promise of the Banlands, it seemed a bit of a side quest only episode. And if it weren't for character moments like Mulder and Scully, sorry, Mole and Locke's marriage, and Rayner being brilliant, I'd say skip ahead, but an overall serviceable entry. 3 Badlands storms out of 5. P.S. Sookie, the Badlands were also in Deep Space Nine. Like everyone, I demand you watch it."
Oh, come on, Jack, not you too. Oh, flipping heck.
Of course. Okay, Joe, can you read Cliff?
"Green Dude and Emo Girl have as much poker face when being asked questions as a child being asked if they took a cookie. Oh, the comedy sidekick lady just so happens to be a massive history buff. That's lucky, like, couldn't have been any new person. We need a bigger boat. Wow, their ship is well overcompensating for something. Why Admiral seems like a wet lettuce? Come on, get a spine soft kit. Paul is awesome as usual, like Hercule Poirot. Book is great. Nice to see a strong male character with a spine. Rayner is a great actor. A lot of pain shown with his backstory. Politics and dilemma with Breen, then 8 stone, 5'4" emo girl takes on two security men, our doctor, and a badass security chief. Come on. Oh, the episode just felt like it got going near the end, and then it ended. 3 out of 5. I still think whatever they find will be blown up, or Wesley Crusher comes back to take it away.
Thanks, Cliff. So, Deb, looks like Cyber Donald is back.
Oh, dear.
Good to read his feedback.
Don't know how to read him out. The Breen are great. Just assume the capitals. The Breen are great, but not as great as me, as everyone loves me, and the Breen would too. In fact, I think I met one once, and he told me that, and I won the election. Anyway, the Discovery still need to find the Betazoid bit of cheese to pass the progenitor test. As the late Hannibal Lecter once said, a sensor taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti. But I like Pepsi best anyway. I thought the episode was okay, but would have been better if it was about me and my stolen erection. And my penis is nothing like a mushroom. And if it was, it would power a trillion million spore drives. 3 lights out of 5. And I redshirt Deb because she is me to Suki.
Oh, come on. You know, Cyber. Oh, wait a sec. That was a compliment to me. Yeah, no worries. Carry on.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Right. There's suspicion there.
Yeah, Suki, Cyber Donald character. Mm. So it is back to you, Suki, for Tom Turlow.
Yes, Tom says for episode 7, God, this is like bloody homework. 2 episodes of Doctor Who and an episode of Discovery to provide feedback on. Suki is a real slave driver. I am. You just ask the rest of the crew on the Trek This Out podcast. I am a slave driver. Get to it, guys. Having almost given up on this series of Discovery, this was actually something of an improvement. It was nice to see an actual villain appear. The Breen aren't quite as intimidating as they're intended to be, but at least they are real protagonists. All the intrigue and diplomacy was quite good. I've never bought into the relationship of Goth Girl and Green Guy, so I wasn't particularly heartbroken at his death, although maybe he'll make a comeback if the progenitor tech does as he's promised. All in all, a step up, and hopefully things will build to a decent climax. 3.5 out of 5.
I can read that. So Rick says, this episode is flipping incredible. The Breen standoff was super tense and interspersed with amazing character moments between a lot of the crew. Reno, Adira, and Tilly were standout, but Stamets and Tilly and Stamets and Book were all excellent moments. And the return to the chase was a great ending with a promise of more adventure as we head to the finale. Possibly my favorite episode of potentially my favorite season of Discovery. 5 Reno space cocktails out of 5. Thank you, Rick.
We've also got some audio feedback from Josh.
Hi, guys. Hope you're all keeping well. Here is my feedback for Discovery Season 5. Episode 7, Eragar. Well, this was quite a talky episode, but actually I really found it quite enjoyable. There were 2 parallel stories, the Breen's imminent arrival and the solving of the puzzle, which I think both worked really well, and they dovetailed really nicely together at the end. The Breen's dreadnought ship was certainly imposing, dwarfing the Discovery, and provided just the right level of tension to the situation. So all in all, I thought this was a great episode, and I give it 4 out of 5 lights out of 5. Until next time, let's fly.
Thanks for that, Josh. Thank you very much for all your feedback.
Okay, so that is our listener feedback, and please keep that coming these last few episodes. And we are moving on to Red Shirt.
I woke up this morning, put on my red shirt. Oh.
Now, this is Joe's first time, so he's exempt, right?
No. No.
We are unanimous in that. If you want, Joe could go first, or he can just wait until everybody votes for him, and then he can go. You're in charge, Rachel. Pick somebody.
Oh, yikes. Okay. Well, I'm not going to make him go first. But this is a tough one. So I think everyone, you know, did a pretty good job, but I'm going to have to go with Sookie for this Deep Space Nine business.
You know what I'm going to do?
The people have spoken.
People may as well. I might make this a rule from going on from next week onwards. Do not vote for me. Just get put down as a given that I have not watched Deep Space Nine. But from this, as Rachel's on, I'll take that vote. It's the nomination, I should say, this time around.
Oh, it's just a single nomination. So who are you going to go with, Sookie?
Oh, me. Right. I've got my list ready. As the regulars know, I've got a list these days. So this is what I'm going to. My nomination so far, and I haven't chosen yet, Joe, for picking on me straight away. Right. You know, we've hardly met, and all of a sudden you're having to go with me about Deep Space Nine. Come on, man. And then we have Andrea. I heard you. I heard you shout red shirt. I heard you in the episode. So, yeah, you're on my list. Deb, right, for putting me off by wearing that Doctor Who shirt and then going on about your boobs. You know, you know, it's just absolutely no need for it. It's just putting me well off. Drew, you know, for some reason, Drew's been very, very quiet during this episode. I don't think people may have noticed, but I've noticed it. So Drew's there. And then Rachel, for not controlling Joe. You know, stop. You know, that's our lovable, fantastic, great host. Dog pick on him, but no, you didn't. Now, so I am actually going to go. This is only because Rachel here says we have to be kind to you. And it's not, you know, it does not work like that. So
do what I can.
Joe as my red shirt of the week.
Okay. So, Joe, would you like to nominate a red shirt?
Would you like to nominate Sookie? I think that goes.
That you've been nominated.
Well, I think it goes to Sookie anyway, because you haven't watched DS9. And really, I mean, that's the biggest thing here. There's so many callbacks, so many references, and it's such an amazing series.
Doing it to yourself, Sookie.
No, well, look, okay, I understand all this. Now, I've already been voted by your other half because of Deep Space Nine. I can't really have two votes, but I shall have to take it. I have made, you know, the rules are there. You have decided to choose me again. Joe. Everybody, pick on Joe now.
Okay, Andrea, that's to you.
Well, I feel like I like to pride myself on being like almost like stat or like dragging up my facts from previous Trek seasons, and like Joe's a bit good at it. So like, you know, if this was a Turin podcast, it would be like, you know, just to kind of save myself and make me position secure. Deb, there's always a reason to nominate Deb, but Cyber Donald told us to do it, and I can't do anything that Cyber Donald says. So Deb's safe this week. Drew has been quiet. He has been quiet. I mean, he did a few drinky poos before the episode. Rachel's moopsy, which is in the background, is making me triple nervous, but really, it's got to be Deep Space Nine. I'm sorry, Sookie, but if you're banning it, I'm going to get my last nomination for not watching Deep Space Nine in.
Dear me, Andrea.
That's three for Sookie. Okay, Drew.
I was quiet. I was quiet because there's like six of us on the cast, and I don't want to be chatting over everyone. I just let you guys do chatting.
Well, I just thought you was a hungover or something. I don't know.
I've now got a gin and tonic, but this is the first one of the day. It's going to be Sookie, not for Deep Space Nine, though, because you clearly haven't watched Lower Decks either, because you didn't recognise Moopsy. You didn't recognise Moopsy, though. Blimey.
Wow.
What a character. So it's Sookie for not watching Lower Decks.
This does not mean for next week you could turn from me not watching Deep Space Nine to me not watching Lower Decks. I'll make sure Lower Decks is banned from next week as well.
What's next? You haven't seen Prodigy?
I have seen Prodigy.
Have you?
I have. Yeah. I have seen Prodigy.
Okay, Deb.
Right. Well, my vote is meaningless, but I did have a list as well. Rachel for attempting voter manipulation. Sookie for numerous reasons, for ruining my brilliant reveal about June Hudson this morning for not watching Lower Decks and for being Suki, really. Andrea for never being redshirted, and Drew because the Jason Isaacs mask goes further and further away, and I haven't seen your cat. I forgot to find anything for Joe, for being very clever and knowing lots of facts. Oh, but having a cat. You're exempt.
A cat.
A dog. Sorry, I've got different glasses. Oh, I don't do the very focus. Hello. Hello, what's the dog's name?
His name is Loki. It's short for Locutus.
Oh.
Hold on. What was your dog's name again? Sorry.
His name is Loki. It's short for Locutus of Joe. That's his full name.
Oh, a bulk dog.
All right, so...
yes, Suki, of course.
So I have now been redshirted for some unknown reason. I don't know why. People seem to think me not watching one particular show is the cause of me being thrown out of an airlock. It just
but you keep putting
right.
all this other rubbish that you're watching.
I don't care about, you know. I want to watch this other rubbish. But anyway, Andrea.
Go on then, Andrea. You're the expert.
I feel like it's not going to be a death this week, but it's going to be a reassignment. And I was looking at the size of that Breen ship, and I was thinking, cleaning the toilets and the urinals on the Breen ship is probably a full-time job for someone. So I feel like that's the red shirt duty that we should allocate to Suki.
Just before we carry on, how do you know Breens use toilets or lavatories at all? They might have some other form of waste disposal, which means I will not have to go around, you know, going around urinals and stuff like that.
Maybe it's those are like still suits.
Breen jelly.
I saw a Breen come out of the loo in the episode when they did the flashback. And I could tell from the screen it was particularly smelly. Andrea.
Smelly nice.
Actually, I'm going to redshirt myself for nearly bringing back the feces of the species there. I'm sorry, like, I'm going to take off the team. It's me.
We should do a special because I was never able to play feces of the species.
I mean, you only did that like
and
what,
we are
twice.
Not playing that
it only lasted
again.
A couple episodes.
We're not playing that again.
I think Bob should come back for a special and do it. Oh, the other reason I was going to vote for Suki is because he's got this strange idea he's in charge. And that just bamboozled me that you can actually make rules.
I can make these sort of rules knowing that nobody's going to follow them at all. So I can go around saying whatever I like knowing nobody's going to follow me.
I thought I was a dunner for eating popcorn. But...
No, I think it's Suki. It's cleaning Breen latrines.
It might be a nice job, you never know.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know, do they do slaves or, you know, what their situation is, but maybe they would treat you.
If they do, you know, they better treat me nice.
As long as they let you watch Doctor Who by propping your phone up in the corner.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I think they're I would assume they're too xenophobic for that, but I could be wrong.
Go on, right, sign us off.
Alrighty. So this has been Star Trek Discovery Season 5, Episode 7, Erica. And that is goodbye from me. And a goodbye from Joe. Say bye, Joe.
Goodbye. Live long and prosper.
That's good.
he's just showing off now, isn't he? He's just showing off. First podcast, my arse. He's been on loads, you could tell.
And goodbye from Suki.
Bye.
And Andrea.
Goodbye.
Drew.
Goodbye.
And Deb.
Bye, John Boy. No one will get that. Night, John Boy.
That's good night, John Boy. I get that.
Bye, Mary Ellen.
Lighters.
And I will start with Deb.
My initial thoughts were that I really enjoyed it. And there's lots of callbacks, which I'm sure we'll talk about The Voyager and Deep Space Nine, so it fits in there. And it's setting us up well, I think, for the next episode. Sorry, I keep dropping this.
You are crackling and messing around with the microphone a bit too much, Deb. You might have to start all that again.
Because it might be more coherent.
Do you want to get? Should we just get to somebody else? I'll give.
Yeah, next. I'll tell you what. I agree with what Suki said.
Thank you for listening, and you can find us all on Twitter as a group. You can find us on at TrekThisOutPod, or you can go to our Facebook page at TrekThisOut. Just Google that. You can find me on Twitter as Sidemount_151.
So you can find me on Twitter as at Vintage1983V if you're into Star Trek shitposting and a lot of other thirst. If you particularly like to follow me Star Trek art, have a look on Instagram for Vin of the Basement.
And I'm just Lufdee, Luffdee on Twitter. But if you are interested in knowing our obsession about Jason Isaacs, you can find me, Kat, and Andrea posting weird stuff about Jason Isaacs. Hashtag Team Basement.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram as 23BDI.